Hey there, welcome to the very first show of Sounds Gay I'm In, the spoken word podcast / radio / news show about queerness and queer media representation at UBC and the Lower Mainland, produced by CATR's LGBTQ2SIA+ collective. My name is Ji-Yoon. I am the collective coordinator this year, and I am joined remotely over Zoom by
William, he, him. I like long walks on the beach and men who have semi-decent relationships with their dads.
My name is Dawson. I use he, him pronouns. I'm versatile in every sense of the word, and I usually end up with brunettes.
Hi, my name is Chris. I use they, them pronouns, and I enjoy baking bread and watching animated movies.
And Tintin, she, her, she, they, you know how it is. I don't know what else to say. I'm happy to be here. That's all.
Cool. On that note, I saw a TikTok recently that was like, people who have she, they pronouns are the hottest people. And we are broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory at CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. Though I will note that we are recording remotely at our own homes. Some of us are literally in the closet right now because it happens to make a very beautiful recording space that is very socially isolated also. So the LGBTQ2SIA+ collective is based around creating a space for queer folk, including UBC students and community members alike, to create content about news, culture, and personal experiences. And if you would like to join our collective, shoot us an email at LGBTQIA collective@CITR.ca, or check us out on Instagram and Twitter at Sounds Gay Show.
Red Cat Records is an amazing artist-owned and operated record store. Shop from their diverse online music collection and get free shipping within Vancouver and the Lower Mainland with the purchase of 2 or more LPs. If you would like to further support them through the evolving COVID-19 crisis, you can do so by buying a gift card to use at a later date. Visit www.redcat.ca for more information.
So, for a first ever show, we thought it would be apt to come out as a radio show with the topic of coming out.
Time has come for me to break.
That was I'm Coming Out by Diana Ross.
Back to today's topic about coming out. Or more specifically, we wanted to ask and discuss, why are we as a culture so obsessed with coming out? Who gets to come out?
I don't know about you guys, but I had pamphlets from my parents when I came out. Like, I made sure to be prepared. I had tissue boxes. I had a YouTube in the background playing with really queer songs. I made sure in each of those pamphlets, I highlighted like the suicide rate among like queer communities if families weren't accepting. I gaslighted my parents. I gaslighted my parents, essentially.
It's like not a bad type of gaslighting, though. It's like,
I couldn't take any chances, like, honestly.
It's survival, you know?
I feel like I came out in a really, I didn't plan mine out. I kind of wish I planned mine out like you did, William. It kind of just happened in a parking lot. So, yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's probably good that you had a whole plan going into it. I kind of just, like, it kind of just happened, you know?
Was it just, like, a surreal experience? Like, you felt it in the moment of, like, a Target parking lot before Target left, you know, Canada, where you're like, oh, my gosh, this is the moment. I have to tell them. Did it feel like that? Or was it, like, in the car, something queer happened, and you're like, hey, I'm gay?
I don't even remember, like, the lead up to it, to be honest. I think maybe, like, my mom said something homophobic, and I was like, wow, like, I gotta say something. So that's probably how it initiated, but I'm pretty sure it happened in like the parking lot of Aberdeen Mall or something. It was in
Oh my God.
I don't remember where.
But it's iconic.
Yeah, it was in the back of my car, my parents' car. Yeah, I don't own a car. I can't drive. No, I actually can't drive. I don't have all of the gay tropes. Oh. Just a couple.
I do remember in the week before I told my parents, I was pointing out really gay things to them whenever we were spending time together to, like, I don't know, make them more aware of the gayness around them in their city.
Why did you decide to come out, William? Like, how did you come to that decision?
Yeah, so my sister is trans, and I remember growing up how difficult it was to accept my queerness when my family didn't accept her. So I was like, well, if I don't tell them, then I'm going to be subject to all this scrutiny as I get older. And I just can't take that anymore. So I was like, okay, let's make sure I have all the details. Let's make sure they're aware of, you know, that my trans sister isn't the only queer person in this damn city. And yeah, it was like a moment where I realized, yeah, this is it. Like, it has to happen now, or it's never gonna happen. I had to build up that courage. And in some sense, it kind of sucks that, like, the closet for a lot of people isn't that, like, safe space. Because for a lot of people, they're in the closet because, like, their families aren't accepting, and like they just can't take that reckoning or fallout of, well, what if my family doesn't accept me? Do you know?
Yeah. Thanks for answering my question. I think, yeah, I guess it does come to a point where it is like a personal safety thing sometimes, or it just feels like, yeah, I guess no one has the same sort of realization or comes to the same conclusion. Sometimes it's, you know, premeditated. Sometimes it happens in a parking lot. So...
When I think about coming out, I don't have one moment that I think is significant. I think for me, at least, like, throughout my life, people have been asking me to come out before I even knew what coming out meant.
Yeah.
And growing up, it seemed like some people wanted to validate their own gaydar more than they wanted to ensure I was comfortable identifying or being queer on my own terms, whether I invited them into that conversation or not, because there is this invasive curiosity that sets this up for a discussion for many people that do not consent to have it in the first place. And I think that's an interesting thing to talk about.
That's super uncomfortable. Yeah, also the narrative that, like, there is one single coming out. Like, I feel like whenever I thought about coming out, I thought about all these dramatic YouTube videos from like 2012 of like people like recording themselves and their parents secretly in the kitchen or the family room, and having, this is like the big moment, but it doesn't share all of the other little moments with their friends, or, you know, in the future when like maybe it comes up in a conversation at work, or just like it's something that is kind of lifelong because everyone expects like you to be like straight, but also like this opposite thing where people pressure you to come out. Like, that kind of like reminds me of like when I came out for the first time to my like coworkers, they were like, yeah, I already knew, like I could already tell. And that was comforting in a way because it meant that they had thought about it and like were cool with it, and I don't know, didn't treat me any differently. But also it's like weird that people are perceiving you before you can perceive yourself in that way.
Yeah, I feel like I had a similar experience. I also feel like I've been really lucky in that I've never really had to come out to, I mean, I think I started really coming out to people in university, and then prior to that I just was like didn't talk about it or tell anybody. But I think in university I felt lucky because I was able to meet people who didn't assume that I was straight right away, which was kind of cool. And I've been lucky that I got to work in places where I was working with an overwhelming, like with mostly like queer people and people who are very like vocal about their queerness. Yeah, so I feel like that's really like really fortunate, and not everyone gets that experience.
I love those spaces where it's just like all queer people, and you feel like you don't have to, you know, be straight presenting, or like those assumptions about being heteronormative like put on you. It's so great. So I like Starbucks. As someone who is heterosexually presenting, I find that coming out is like a continuous process for me. So I always have to explain to someone that I'm gay. And I find that like most notable of all, I have to do that in like academic settings where like queer people are normally not considered within the literature.
I think I wanted to ask people, I think someone said, maybe it was you, Dawson, actually, who was like, oh, people wanted me to come out, or they were just waiting for you to come out. I feel like I've always been read as queer, but I don't feel like, obviously, I think I'm disregarding a lot of like trauma from my childhood, but I kind of have always been coded as queer. I've always kind of, yeah, I don't know. I feel like when I came out, people were like, oh, that's not a surprise at all. Or, you know, even to like high school friends or like middle school people even. Yeah, I was curious if everyone else had that experience of like, they were, if, you know, family members or friends, I guess probably friends, were shocked.
Yeah, similar. Nobody in my life was surprised when I came out, and sometimes they would almost seem offended that I waited this long to tell them. And when I'm thinking about what my appearance is, if I'm straight acting or not, that anxiety about coming out eventually sort of warped my understanding of my queerness and my appearance. I'm still unsure like how I am perceived by people. And yeah.
That's really interesting, because I'm constantly wary of how I'm perceived by people. That's probably some sort of trauma response, in all honesty. But I grew up in like a Christian, all Filipino like community. What's really interesting about Coquitlam specifically is that like there's a lot of minorities, and there's like large like immigrant population. But how these communities coalesce is generally within like community organization groups, like churches, or like community organizations. So I was kind of brought up within that mentality of like homosexuality is like a choice, and you can you know, decide not to be, as long as like your thoughts are on God. Religious trauma. So yeah, it's interesting to see like the diversity and like these experiences.
Yeah, definitely. I can definitely touch on the religious trauma aspect. I feel like my coworkers weren't surprised, but I think a lot of other people were, especially people who didn't like know me as well or like in that way, because I grew up super Christian. I feel like I had two like breakthroughs, one as someone coming out of religion and coming into my sexuality in general, and then like another realization that, oh, there's this other aspect of me being queer. And both have been so, I don't know, presented and like taught to me all throughout my childhood, all throughout growing up, that both were like very wrong and like I would go to hell for it. And I really believe that. Like, I believe that for such a long time, even if I stopped logically believing in it. Anyway, a lot of people outside of my coworkers were really surprised because I'm also like quite straight presenting, I think.
Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop is Vancouver's choicest destination for one-of-a-kind artist-made prints, posters, screen prints, riso prints, paintings, acrylic paintings, watercolor paintings, ceramic mugs, ceramic plates, ceramic bowls, ceramic pots, lapel pins, hats, toques, crochet bathing suits, jewelry, trinkets, knickknacks, hand-painted signs, curated thrift, and a bunch more stuff that won't fit in this designated block of airtime. Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop, located at 1636 Venables, just off Commercial, open 11 to 6, 6 days a week.
This is Sasha Bilot, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
I feel like another one of like my biggest fears for when I was coming out was having my religion used against me. So this was before, conversion therapy was made illegal. So at that time, I think I had secretly told one of my aunts that I was gay beforehand, and she had just completely betrayed me by sending me like this this web link to this conversion camp. And it put me in a panic before I came out to my parents. I was like, oh shit, what if my parents put me in conversion camp? Do they have like the internet there? Can I use Tumblr? Like, what do I do? At the time, like thinking back on it now, it's probably hilarious that like my first thought was, can I access Tumblr? But it was like my one place of refuge for like being queer. Flashback.
Tumblr was a lot of people's first brush with like non-straightness, I guess. I don't know. I feel like also, I mean, maybe Tumblr isn't a thing that like kids these days are on, because I feel like it's not really that relevant of a social media platform.
Yeah, what do kids use these days? Like Ask FM?
TikTok.
TikTok.
Gay TikTok. Like, yeah, and I had a lot of trouble finding gay TikTok when I first downloaded it, but now every TikTok is like lesbian TikTok or Kate Bush TikTok. But yeah, I don't know. I wonder if that experience is different, because I think there's such different platforms. Tumblr is very personal. You can be very anonymous and make a lot of internet friends from all around the world, whereas TikTok is very visible and you have to really put yourself out there. You don't really have that layer of anonymity and protection that you had on tumblr.com.
Very true. Also, I didn't know that you shouldn't use your real name in TikTok, or like that people don't normally use a real name. I thought it was going to be like Facebook or something. I had no idea what was going on. I made mistakes.
Oh no.
Wait, people do that? I use my real name.
Yeah, see, thank you. Okay, so like there's this older generation of queers who are using their real name and not hiding behind a pseudonym and commenting peach emojis on really cute gay people. Is that just me? Just me? Okay.
I mean, I don't do that, but I respect it, and maybe I'll start doing it.
If you like the show, give us a peach in the comments below.
People can leave comments, and we do want lots of audience interaction. So
yeah. Speaking of audience interaction, we're setting up an Ask FM.
I never really got, actually, maybe I just didn't have friends who asked me questions, but I never like, like, what's Ask FM?
Isn't it like FormSpring, where like people could leave you questions, and like often it was like people just like bullying you? Or was that just me? Probably just me.
No, yeah.
You wanted to be bullied.
That's exactly it, honestly. It's just being bullied. So if you ask us if we're queer in Ask FM, we're sending you a peach emoji. I clearly don't know what the peach emoji is correctly going to be used for, or like what it's supposed to be.
So you just leave peach emojis, nothing else, just a peach emoji?
Mainly for this one guy on TikTok who cooks and talks about like modern US politics. I think it was mainly because one of his earlier TikToks were of like peach jam. And I was like, oh, peaches. And I ironically used the peach emoji.
Has he responded to any of your peach emoji comments?
He liked like two of them, but I've sent like 54. So
the peach emoji?
Mm-hmm. I mean, 54 peach emoji comments.
And I'm using my real name. Like, I'm not a bot.
Wait, like your whole name?
Yeah, it's my whole name.
Why would you do that on the internet? It's a wild west out there.
It's TikTok. I thought it was going to be Facebook or Instagram. I didn't know. No, none of like the Gen Zers told me how to use this correctly. I came in late to the game, guys.
Facebook.
Disgust in your voice, June.
Speaking of social media, do you guys find that you are more queer presenting on specific platforms, or like you compartmentalize your identity of queerness into like these different aspects of social media? Like how do you as queer people use social media?
That's so interesting. I've never thought about like that way, just because I feel like I came out through social media. It was like a space where I was like, oh, lit, like nobody knows who I am, but like if they do, I'm able to like explore these things. But maybe that's just like, again, what Tintin said, like tumblr.com, where you're able to just like do that. But I don't know. Yeah, I can't say where I am more queer presenting.
For like explicitly queer like dating apps like Grindr or Tinder, I definitely have more of like here's my resume on Tinder, which I don't know is like what you're supposed to do with it, but on Grindr it's literally like two lines. It's like in my name portion it's like look at my bio, and then in my bio it's just like graduate students, I like long walks.
Oh, for sure.
Because no one reads enough on Grindr, right? It's like you have 2 seconds of my time, where's the next boy, you know? Like
yeah, I was gonna say I think Tinder like requires social media to make an account, or at least it used to, I think. But Grindr is like a entire disassociation from your community, I think, and it creates an environment of anonymity and discreteness, and a lot of straight acting people can find access to queerness, at least parts of that, like sex and or chatting as well.
Mm-hmm. That's totally a whole nother can of worms that we definitely need to go into in another episode.
Grindr episode, I'm down.
Okay, should I hold off?
You can share as much as you would like. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think to do a little bit of introspective archiving. I'm trying to think of like when, I don't remember learning about Grindr. I just remember having it at like one point in, or getting it at one point in high school. I must have been probably 15 or 16, which is not legal. You're supposed to be 18. And I think for me, it was probably an escape, and I didn't meet up with anybody for, I think, over like a year or two. It was a weird alter ego, I think, for me to even use a different name. And it was exciting, and it was also dangerous, I would say, for a lot of people. Thankfully for me, I didn't have any experiences that I'm regretful of that much, but I think it's interesting now how out young people are on these apps, dating apps, and also like social media as well, and like the new consequences that are facing like young queer people and who is preying on them, or if that's mm-hmm.
I definitely wish someone taught me how to use Grindr. I wish like I was more active in my queer community, like in high school or like in my early years of college, that like helped me understand some of the terminology, how to keep myself safe, stuff like that, you know? I also use my real name on Grindr.
William.
You can find William anywhere.
Wow.
I shouldn't give people my last name on this, should I?
No, take it off.
Can we have an episode where we just like Google William's name?
See what pops up.
William.
Dawson, you had it since you were 15. Was that like before or after you came out?
For me, I got it before I came out, probably to myself. And yeah, I'm just thinking, I have it now still. I don't use it that often. It's a little annoying because I feel like it's been a part of my life for so long and I just want it to go away. But I still have it because Grindr has like a monopoly on like some types of interactions, I feel like, for like gay men. There's so many problematic things with the app and just the ways you can identify with it and what you're seeking. It hasn't evolved. Like, I think it's very much outdated for the queer community.
I don't know about you, Dawson, but I found it very hard to meet other queer men if it's not part of like an organization. So like I found a lot of refuge in going to Grindr just to meet other gay men and like of like validating each other's experiences with being queer.
Yeah, I agree. I could have discussions with people who I didn't know, but who were in similar situations, I think, because I was so young when I was on it. I also was most interested in talking to people who were around my age, and some people were also underage. So it's very weird to think about the lengths we have to go to just to have a conversation.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is true or not, but are kids in high school now getting taught appropriate uses of social media or like how to keep themselves safe on like Facebook or Instagram?
I think we're all around the same age, so we probably had similar schooling and experiences, but I don't think I really did at all. If anything, it was like, don't put your real name on social media, which is something I've been taught when I was in second grade.
I'm just thinking about like safety measures I sort of had to learn how to adopt using Grindr when I was younger. And before, it would be like, if I'm going to meet up with you, I need like your Snapchat or something just to like validate your personhood or your, you know, mm-hmm. you are who you are. So, but now there's a lot of crazy shit happening on Grindr, and that asking people Snapchat is like not enough. People can still like be savvy with Snapchat in a really harmful way. So part of it, you just have to like, unfortunately, be prepared to be in unsafe situations, and I'm not sure what the solution is.
Do you think other platforms like Tinder or even Bumble or something are safer alternatives, or is that not as used or not as like, doesn't have as big of a pool for gay men?
I think on Tinder now you can verify yourself like some well-known celebrity, but that's not really what it means. So I feel like that could be a good way to keep yourself safe, but I'm not entirely savvy with how that might protect people, and I haven't heard anything on the ground.
I just think it's super interesting from like a tech perspective, because I think a lot of like, there's been a lot of dating apps that's come out over the years, but I don't think, yeah, like what Dawson was saying, any of them have caught up to, you know, like the safety measures, you know, meeting people, like so easy to like lie about your age, have fake profiles and stuff like that. Yeah, definitely like something to think about, especially because there's so few safe spaces for queer people. Yeah.
I find this discussion we're having like super interesting. Like, we've gone from it not being a safe space in the home to maybe it not being a safe space like as queer person dating in the community. And I think that's just super interesting.
The digital is how I think a lot of us are able to find queer people, like we mentioned earlier. Like, even if I do meet queer people organically in real life, it's like, okay, friendship, I am looking, respectfully, I am looking away. And then that's it. Nothing else happens, especially for like lesbians or bisexual women. Like, nothing happens.
Yo. It's such a struggle.
I think the problem with like making relationships with like women, like romantic ones, is just like the process of courtship is so different than, I mean, okay, speaking as a bisexual, it's just so different with the many genders that exist, but just in general, like dating, going on dates or like in being in a relationship with men is so different than everyone else.
I can attest to that. Worlds apart.
If you don't mind me asking, because I I'm queer, but I mainly like date a woman. But what's the biggest difference? Because it's hard. Like I can't. I go on Tinder, or I went on Tinder because of the sole reason of like it's so hard, and like you don't know. Like how do you even ask somebody out?
Yeah. You ask someone out. Oh my gosh. Yes. How do you?
How do you?
I would rather pass away.
Oh my gosh. You know, I'm always the one that asks people out because I think with at least like on dating apps where like I'm courting like say a lady, no one asks anyone anything until like it's, I don't know, I feel like I have to be like big top energy like has to come out, otherwise it's just gonna be like we're friends.
Also, Tinny, I love that you like are saying courting, like that's so good.
You're in 16th century gentle.
like Pride and Prejudice novel.
Yeah, because
like, courting.
I think people nowadays say like, oh, I'm seeing someone, I'm talking to someone, but courting just adds this level of drama and
100%.
Formality, and I am living for it. I would love to be courted.
In the Philippines, courtship is when you go over to the person's house, talk to their parents, and offer them gifts, and then maybe you can go on a date. So that's honestly what I'm imagining.
Okay, yeah, that's exactly what it is usually.
To answer your question, Grace, the main difference for me is, yeah, like Tintin, like I have to be more explicit and very much like top energy with women.
That's weird. Yeah, because same. Yeah, I've like had the same experience of like having to learn how to like ask people out versus like waiting, because then nothing happens.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of like how you are socialized as like a woman, where you're essentially, you're not supposed to be a sexual person, and like two, if you are, it's like I don't know, it's really like pathologized, like there's something dirty or like wrong about initiating I don't know, like romantic encounters or like sexual encounters. But yeah, I don't know, I've just been thinking a lot about that, because it's, I don't know, in quarantine you're like, oh, okay, just chatting with people online, and then it, I don't know, there's just like another added layer with like the pandemic of like not wanting to meet up and having to be like more coy when speaking with women because of the pandemic and like unsafety generally, like in terms of meeting up with people. But yeah
it's true, I've completely given up on pandemic dating.
Yeah, it's like rough out there, I don't know. I feel like also the one thing about also dating women is that I always end up being their friend if nothing works out, and that's not the case with men ever. I never choose to be friends with the men that I date.
That's hilarious.
Same. I don't want it.
I was just thinking about like how, like, as I don't know, I've had friends who are like straight, and they'll like wait forever for like a guy to ask them out, and I would just be like, why don't you do it, but then they don't want to. I don't know, it's like such a weird thing for, yeah, it's so gendered, I don't know.
Definitely. And like Tintin was saying, it's viewed as coming off too strong if the women initiate. And I think a common view held among like my friends who like men and date men are, you know, don't bother if he's not trying, because even in a case where you are making the moves, it's usually not reciprocated. Whereas if you do nothing and are waiting, I don't know, I think that the attitude that if men are like straight men are interested, they will let you know is very much true. And if a girl comes on too strong, it'll scare them away or something, or they don't.
Damn.
It's not met as with like positive reaction. And coming from straight dating to queer dating, that was very hard, because again, I had to not only put myself out there and my feelings out there, but unlearn years of doing nothing, and it left me with not knowing how to court people or be a normal person romantically.
Yeah, entering the non-straight dating zone is what I will call it now, is so embarrassing and gross. Like initially it's just so embarrassing because you have to relearn all of the like social dynamics, or not even relearn, but just like learn like a brand new set of, yeah, like social expectations, I guess. And then you just become like baby, like you just have the dating repertoire of someone who is literally like a child, so it's just so awkward. And that's why I guess they call it baby queer. But
FM Vancouver Reloaded, playing your favorite tunes and mouth-humping your ear holes full of voice talk. Yeah, we do that.
This is Sasha Bilot, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
I wanted to ask for everyone, do you think that it is easy to remain friends with people you've had romantic or sexual relationships with? And do you think it's healthy in the long run?
I think I try to, but I also, I mean, I know that the people that I've dated that aren't men, I'm still kind of friends with, but it's like always like an arm's length. Like it's never like we are best friends, you know?
Yeah, like this used to be like a yes for me, but also, I don't date people, so, well, not like I don't date people, but like, I'm bad at dating.
Same.
So, I don't know, like, if it's, like, just, like, purely sexual, I would be like, yeah, let's be friends still, but I don't know, dating, I feel like is a bit different, but yeah, I used to be like, yeah, I would like to be friends with these people, because, I don't know, like, the reason that you date somebody is because you like hanging out with them, so then why wouldn't you still, like, want to hang out with them, but I feel like now I'm a bit more on the side of like you need to have time and like Tintin said, like at a like space, but I'm not opposed to it. Like also I'm like low-key in love with like all my friends because they're so awesome, so that's just where I am. I'm just like, oh, you guys are all cool. None of them would date me though, so it's cool.
Yeah, that's true. I'm in love with all my friends too. I think it's the most pure kind of love.
Yeah queer friendships too, like especially I feel like queer friendships are like so wholesome and nice, and especially I've had a lot of like friends who we came out with, which is like such a special experience to like come out together and figure it out together, or like somebody coming to you and being like, hey, can you give me advice on this? I feel like it's like a beginning of like such a wonderful time. I don't know. Yeah,
for me, thankfully I haven't been in any unsafe relationships, so I'm usually the annoying person and wants to be friends with them after, because genuinely like talking to people or like being with people who I enjoy their time, so for me I'm always like there's always like this lack, I feel like, or this void of some types of relationships that I always just want to get the most of and maximize our relationship together. I don't know if that makes sense.
Totally makes sense. I'm just really bad at keeping friends in general. Like, as a young adult, I find it hard to make friends for one thing, and then two, for the people I do date, I'm attracted to this, like, probably toxic sense of masculinity, so it's never been great trying to keep them as friends. But for the ones that, like you know, are pretty nice, and I actually do, like them genuinely as friends, in like a wholesome way, I try to, but it never like sticks that long. And I think that in part that's because like there's so many pressures aside from being queer to like maintain your personal lives and like well-being and health and stuff like that, and like get your career going. So I've never completely kept them in my close circle, if that makes any sense.
I'm just thinking that everybody who I've had some sort of romantic relationship with, that was a little bit sustainable, but not necessarily lasting. They weren't out to their family, and neither was I. So I'm just trying to think about how that affects our relationships.
Yeah, I think that, speaking of coming out, I think the imbalance, if that is the right word, like if one person is out to their family and then the other person in a relationship isn't, I think it adds like a tension that I think like a lot of queer people are aware of. I know that that was the case for me in a lot of my early queer relationships, was I wasn't out to my family and the people that I were attracted to were often out to theirs. Another story to talk about is like, I don't know, I dated a lot of like people who had more, I guess, like liberal families, so to speak, and they were like really loving and like, oh, like I love my like queer child. But yeah, I don't know, it was just always so hard to like strike that balance because I just felt like that wasn't the case for me at all, and yeah, it was really hard.
Yeah, like totally feel that. Like I came out to my family because I was dating somebody, or I'm dating somebody, but just like such differing experiences. Yeah, and then I don't know, you kind of get a sense of, I don't know, yeah, it is so hard to strike that balance and not feel like gross. Like personally, I don't know. That's just for me. It's just like, oh, like not about like the other person, but more about like, oh shit. Like you kind of go back into that same mode of, I don't know, like you're a teenager again and you're just like so hyper aware that you're like in the closet and then having to balance, you know, your outside life with your home life and then having to switch constantly. I feel whether it's like context switching or whatever, or switching the way that you act, it's like difficult. And I think adds another layer of just like mental exhaustion that I don't think a lot of people talk about. Like if you're queer to your friends and then not to your family, like that switch that you have to do like day to day.
I definitely know what you mean. The guys that I dated that did have like really accepting families, I was like, oh my gosh, this is like a social unicorn. Can they adopt me? Like, I know I'm like 21 years old, but like I can get them the papers like right now. So yeah, I guess like consciously like switching between like hetero presenting and like queer presenting, it was just so relieving within these families or like so accepting of their children.
Yeah, I can definitely, I am in that boat right now. Like I am in my physical closet and in the figurative closet with my family. I'm out to everyone but my family. And it is weird because it's kind of like, I turn off a lot of myself at home and there are a lot of experiences that they won't know about and that I can't tell them about because I don't feel safe sharing that with them. I am really scared of, like, I know what will happen. I know that they will tell all of my family members in Korea and everyone will pray for me and everyone will bombard me with messages about how it's a sin. And I cannot deal with that. Like a relationship in itself can be very stressful in addition to being super fun. I think crushes and new relationships are often very stressful in and of itself, and having that added layer of just thinking about like what would happen if I told them about who I was seeing or what I was doing is just kind of unbearable. And feels like I'm lying more to other people than I am to myself. Like I am betraying and keeping something from the person I am dating and also keeping something from my family. So it feels like I'm lying to everyone and that sucks.
I feel like that's probably why, again, returning to the initial like topic of coming out, it's probably why it's such an, like people think it's such an important thing is like this idea of like living your truth or like, you know, being honest with like yourself. I mean, it's probably like, I guess I posed the question like initially when we were planning this episode, but like, why do you think people were also obsessed? Not like we are all, but like generally see coming out as such a huge like milestone in someone's life. Like, why do you think that is?
I would say it's definitely a dog whistle to people whose only barrier in life is being queer. So I think that this narrative around coming out, or, you know, as the expectations of coming out in Western societies are based in these assumptions of acceptance for some people within the community, but certainly not for everyone, maybe not for most people. I'm just thinking about what Ji-Yoon said, and I feel actually very similar to Ji-Yoon, although I am recently out to my immediate family in the home that I live in with. I still feel very uncomfortable in ways that I knew I would feel and why I didn't choose to come out, because although it was a complicated night and we talked about a lot of things when I did come out, the next day it was as if nothing had changed, which was disappointing. So I still don't feel like I can talk to them about my experiences and what I'm doing with people, how I feel, etc. And this is after I've come out, so
I'll mail you the pamphlets, Dawson.
Thanks so much.
I mean, I feel like that's what happened with me when I came out to my family. Like, we just never talked about it ever again. And then I don't know if there's like a right way to respond to your child coming out, but I feel like when the case is that you come out and then you choose not to ever talk to your kid about it ever again, it's like, it feels like almost gaslighting in a way, or it felt like gaslighting to me, because I was like, oh, did that even register? Did that matter? And then, I don't know, it was probably just like, oh, we shouldn't talk about this kind of thing, because like, what would, like, how will friends react to this kind of thing, was the impression that I got, at least in my case.
Yeah, like, on the topic of coming out to like immediate family members, and then just like thinking about why you're obsessed with coming out, like in my experience, my older sister has had like 2 long-term relationships with men, and we're able to just bring them home and kind of no question asked sort of way of like, okay, you bring a boy home, and so like obviously you're dating, and like there was no like, oh, this is my boyfriend, oh, this is my like this is my significant other. It's just like assumed. Whereas like in my case, I had to come out in order to do that. So yeah, I don't know, like maybe that's why, but at the same time, it is that Western obsession of coming out that is even like in place of like you have to come out to your family before you can like introduce them to your partner or whatever, instead of just like being able to bring them over and not be like, oh, so this is your friend.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I do think that like for some of our listeners who are like probably wondering, should I come out to my family or should I not? And you're really debating that question. I think like a good rule of thumb is to come out to one family member you really trust, who you'd probably accept you no matter what. And then go from there. Cause like once you have an ally in your family, it really goes a long way to like build trust within their family. I talked about like my aunt who sent me like the conversion therapy thing. And she was the first person I came out to. And that was like really like wrong of her to send, but she was the most accepting member of my family. And after like a little while, she like got me like a box of condoms as a present, because she thought that's like what being gay meant. It's so wrong. But like I appreciated the gesture, because at that point I knew she got it. Like I could trust her with the things I told her, and she'd help me come out to the rest of my family. So definitely find that one family member who you really trust and come out to them first.
That's dope.
It's so wholesome, like that your aunt was really kind about it in the end.
Part of me also thought that she was just trying to get rid of that box of condoms because half of them was expired.
Oh no.
Interesting.
Pita, if you're listening, I appreciate your gift.
We don't need to tell you that Vancouver has a housing problem.
Mass evictions.
Mass rent evictions.
Unfair rent increases.
What happened to rent control and protection from unfair eviction?
If these or other housing matters concern you, you may be interested in joining the Vancouver Tenants Union. For more information, visit tenantsunion.ca.
What is this?
CITR 101.9 FM.
A center for ants!
What?
We're a radio station broadcasting from UBC Vancouver.
How can we be expected to teach children to learn how to read if they can't even fit inside the building?
Visit CITR.ca.
Derek, it's just a...
I don't want to hear your excuses! The center has to be at least 3 times bigger than this.
I saw this message on Instagram from an Indigenous-run account called Seeding Sovereignty that said there are no closets in the teepee, and this was National Coming Out Day. To me, that is really liberating just to imagine, especially as someone who comes from a culture that doesn't validate that perspective. I was wondering if anybody had any thoughts about, you know, how colonization has sort of created our sexuality as it is so scrutinized today, among other identities of and constructs of gender and race, and how it's so weird and contradictory that these narratives of acceptance are originating in the West.
I was actually watching this Vice YouTube video a few days ago called How the British Empire Exported Homophobia, and it talked about a set of these laws known as the Penal Code, or Section 377, also known as the Anti-Buggery Law, that made being gay a criminal offense. This was exported from Britain to its colonies, and is the reason that homosexuality is illegal in at least 30 of its former colonies today. And while Britain decriminalized homosexuality in 1967, these laws are still upheld in former colonies, and LGBTQ people continue to be prosecuted and sentenced to hard labor in addition to facing societal discrimination. And the thing is, many of these former colonies don't have a history of being hateful towards LGBTQ people. So it's really funny that queerness is attributed to the West and being Western when homophobia was literally exported by the British Empire.
To begin with, like, the concept of gender is definitely a colonial idea. The idea of like female and male roles in society, that completely artificial. In Philippines, there's like a they-them concept. The pronoun is siya, and we've always had that. It's been on the archipelago since time immemorial. And it's one of the ways that I conceptualize like my queerness with my cultural identity. The idea of like there's no definition of female or male roles in like Tagalog history. That's something I find my identity firm with.
I think that's super interesting, yeah, to tie it back to the language.
It's interesting because on the flip side of my experience, I remember when I came out to my family, I'm really like drawing a lot from this one anecdote in this one parking lot, but there's a lot of interesting things that happened that day. I remember my mom told me that she was really ashamed of, God, this, it's actually fine. Like, I feel like it's fine, but she was really ashamed because I became too Western. That was her initial response, was like that I had left the culture that was like mine or that I was born into by coming out because I, or by being gay, because that's a Western thing to my mom. So it's interesting, like, yeah, the way that this conversation is going.
I totally feel that. When I asked my mom whether I should tell my grandmother still in the Philippines whether I'm gay, she was like, no, don't do it. She wouldn't understand. First of all, she doesn't know the word homosexuality. And I'm like, mom, there's a word for being gay in Tagalog. It's called bakla. And she said, no, you're not that. And from what I understood from that, she was like, you're not gay in the Filipino sense. You're gay in the Western sense. And it was like such culture, like, dissonance for me. I was like, wait, is it not the same everywhere? Can my gayness not still apply in the Philippines? Or does being gay mean something completely different there? And I felt just so lost, you know, like, am I Filipino? Am I Canadian? Am I this in between as like a first generation Filipino Canadian? Like, the way that like my ethnicity plays into my sexuality, it's inseparable. And I have no idea how to navigate that with my family. I still don't.
I think that's super interesting because for me, for a long time, I like really resonated with more Western culture and this idea of like queerness with like where I was living and how I was brought up. I like lived in the States when I was younger and didn't really like grow up fully in Taiwan. But for a long time, I was, and still now, like really rejecting or really like see that difference or like separate that a lot until very recently. When I came out to my family, but it was really separate for me at first, like really really struggling with like being from Taiwan, Taiwanese, and like being proud of that, but then like really in my head, me being queer and me being Taiwanese were two different things and were two different identities that I adopted. Yeah, so that's super interesting. Yeah, like I still don't really know how to like put it together at all. Even though like Taiwan is like super accepting and like legalized gay marriage and stuff, it's still like really hard for me to be like, oh, like, culturally and me and my sexuality, they can exist and coexist. But that's, yeah.
I think like in large part, we still have to decolonize like queer organizing and like queer identity, because so much of the conversation and the entanglement with like ethnicity and queerness isn't being discussed enough on the ground. I think we're diving into like really good stuff with like policing and the Black queer community and the intersections there. But like with the Asian community, like with other communities, other ethnic identities, like we still should definitely keep decolonizing our identity of queerness and like what that means within the geographies of where we call home.
Yeah, like I feel like it speaks to the like general Western like cultural hegemony that like we witness. I guess maybe, I mean, also I'm extremely biased in that I'm not living in, you know, where I was born, which is China. And I would like to believe that in China there's a lot of, I mean, I'm pretty sure it's illegal or like it's against the law to like have to be married if you're like to have a gay marriage or whatever in China. But I feel like people find ways to resist the state. And I think that there's this idea that like Western notions of homosexuality and like, you know, the perfect like homo nationalist like person is what you're supposed to aspire to in the West, even if you're not, you know, if you're already not a white person, and if you're already not, you know, upper middle class or middle class and like wealth you know, like, you know, whatever, you just like the perfect like gay subject, gay neoliberal subject, you just are kind of lost in, I don't really know where I'm going. Basically what I'm trying to say is that like I hope that in different parts of the world, like they're not subject to the same kinds of expectations in the West that are impossible to achieve if you're not, you know, fitting in the perfect boxes.
I remember having a conversation with another queer Filipino about using trans, the identity of trans on Filipino traditional gods who didn't have genders, And from what I remember about that conversation, the use of these Western identities onto Filipino gods was an imposition of like Western ideas onto Filipino history, and it shouldn't happen. And I was blown. I was like, oh, I guess my conceptualization of queerness shouldn't be applied to Filipino history and tradition. Like I should learn the history and tradition of the lands where my parents are from and use that language to describe it, because queerness within the terminology of Tagalog or Filipino is the language I should be using as like a decolonial lens. And that was just so mind-blowing to me, and that it revealed a lot of things about how I was like institutionalized, which kind of brings me full circle to like why we need to come out, the coming out process in general. Like, is it because do we come out for people to perceive us and to put us in these like identity boxes of, oh, okay, he's a bottom, or, oh, okay, that's top behavior. Like, do we come out just for the purpose of being perceived by like the heteronormative gaze, or do we come out distinctly because we need, like, we feel we should come out?
And that brings us to the end of the show today. Thank you so much for tuning in to the first ever Sounds Gay I'm In episode. Our next few shows will feature more collective discussions like this one, along with interviews with people on our community gaydar, such as local queer artists, organizers, creatives, and educators. And you! We want to hear your coming out stories, manifestations, questions, or confessions, either anonymously or as yourself. Send a 2-minute-long voice recording or written message to LGBTQIA collective@citr.ca or at Sounds Gay Show on Instagram and Twitter. That's exactly what I just said. Are you serious? If I lose my right now, will I just be dismissed right now? If I lose right now, will I just be dismissed right now? Will I just be dismissed? Welcome to the Sad Fam Club, baby. You are eating. Her to be calm, colonial repercussions, any questions, CC the boss, she's the boss, expert of self, they pray the moon, she raps and spells, I'm attuned to what you're numb to, check my mood.